Yeah, I don't want this to be misunderstood, but I do want to say that this is very, very important. I think if you learn Chovos HaLevavos, to be here every week. The Shaar Bitachon is a unit, and there's a lot of principles that come together as he builds on the ideas that he's trying to assemble. And I would do whatever you can to make sure that you hear the recordings if you're not able to be here live. But definitely, you want to be an active participant, not for my sake, but for the sake of the Chovos HaLevavos himself. Okay, I'm muting everybody. If you want to speak, I think you hold your space bar, and that'll temporarily unmute yourself. Okay, we're gonna start at the bottom left over here on page Shin Zion. But what we spoke about last time was simply that the Toelus, the first of the many benefits and advantages that the Chovos HaLevavos lists for a person who is able to assimilate the concept of Bitachon into his mindset and the way he looks at the world, is that he really doesn't have to answer to anyone except for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The only fear he has is fear of Hashem, and many obstacles that sometimes exist in a person's avodas Hashem are the result of a person, some sort of earthly entity that has its own or his own or her own priorities and agendas that, for whatever priorities and agendas I have, forces me to live up to their expectations, forces me to fit into the box or whatever demands that they have. And sometimes we don't have the strength to withstand the pressure that comes from that opposing force. And a person who has truly achieved bitachon feels that there's nothing to fear other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as a result, the only guiding decision-making force in his life is going to be Torah, mitzvahs, and whatever it is that the Ratzon and Hashem dictates. Let's go down to the bottom left. Achaz ha-to'olos shel bitachon la'avodas Hashem hi, shabotei ha-pelukim meivi osu bitachon b'Hashem la'asiyach daito minyanei olam hazeh lo'rakiz etz machshavosov l'inyanei avodas Hashem. Another advantage that a person will begin to appreciate as they entrench themselves in bitachon is that it allows a person to be able to disconnect in a positive way from what's going on around them. You know, it doesn't have to be as extreme as what we're experiencing right now, but whatever pressures, whatever things may occupy a person's brain space that can distract him from avodas Hashem, that can make it hard just when he sits down in the chavrusa, just to stay focused, keep his head in the game. We all know that when if we're applying for a job, if we're dating, we're, you know, whatever is going on in our head can be very distracting. So bitachon is one major force in combating that. It prevents hesachadas. So he's going to make a comparison, but before we get to the comparison, he says that a person with the ability to unplug, and the unplugging comes from the fact that their trust is entirely directed towards Hashem, they're not always going to be as phased. Even when they have to do ishtahalos and they need to address a matter that may pose complications and may require them to react and respond, but at the same time, the way that they're responding is much more external, and it doesn't eat them up or become all engrossing on an internal plane in the same way, and it allows for menuchas nefesh and allows for chavas hadas, and he compares it to an alchemist. So we don't really encounter alchemists, but in medieval times, the alchemist was this legendary guy who could say hocus pocus and do some sort of archaic chemical reaction and turn silver into gold, and he could turn nechoshes into silver, and so on and so forth. So these guys, you know, they were phonies, but they in the medieval times, they were like they were Bill Gates. You know, they had the hot stock tips, and they knew how to make money because they had this magical method of turning things into gold. But let's hold off for a second. Just to think about what he's saying right now, the more a person is connected to bitachon, the more a person feels like I'm holding on to the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the less that I'm distracted by things, the less that things get me down, and the more that I can think clearly and be at peace. Just reminded me of an interesting Rambam that Rabbi Neuberger once gave some attention to in Perek Tetzvav of Hilchos Ishus. It's a famous parak in the Rambam Hilchos Ishus. Most of Hilchos Ishus talks about, I guess, Nashim and Ezekin, Nichsei Milug, Nichsei Tzon Barzel, a lot of monetary levels in addition to Sheva Brachas and Brachas Erusin and things like that. But in Perek Tetzvav, he talks about the actual relationship between a husband and wife. And he talks about the responsibilities that a husband has and the wife has, but the husband has primarily, in, we'll say, on the emotional plane, and his responsibility towards his wife in that regard. And he says something very surprising. He gives a list. He gives a list of midos that a husband needs to master in order to fulfill his obligation to his wife. And some of them are pretty obvious. Some of them are pretty obvious. One that comes to mind, for example, is shelo yehi ragzan. He's not allowed to be hot-tempered. He's got to be calm. He's got to be able to be even keeled, not to react to things, not to be overly domineering in the house and too authoritarian. He's supposed to be more easygoing guy, someone that his wife is going to appreciate as balmidos. And then what he mentions, which is much more surprising, is he says shelo yehi atzif. Husband is not allowed to be sad. That's a very interesting line. It means, and I'll put it in terms that a Rebbe of mine once used. I don't know if I mentioned this in the Vod, but he said a guy when he comes home from work, from yeshiva, from kol, wherever he's coming from, he's got to knock, before he knocks on the door and goes in, he's got to close his eyes and picture the absolute worst case scenario. What is the absolute havoc, chaos, crazy situation that's going on inside my house right now? Because he may think like he's walking into like a 1950s sitcom, it's black and white, and he's gonna go inside the door and like the dog is gonna come over with his slippers and his wife is gonna hand him the evening paper and a cup of coffee and he's gonna sit down in front of the TV, and relax for a little while. But that's not gonna happen. What he has to picture, because if those are his expectations, it's gonna be a big clash. Rather, what he should picture before he opens the door is the kids are hanging from the ceiling. There's orange juice spilled all over the floor. The phone is ringing, and the soup is boiling over, and the whole place is a mess. There's toys all over the place. Because if he has more realistic expectation, he'll be able to manage whatever it is that he does encounter. But if he's expecting everything to be exactly perfect to fit with where he's holding at the end of a long day, after traffic, after a lot of pressure in the office, after a day like Hillel's, so then he's gonna be in for a surprise. So instead, imagine the worst, and then you'll be in good shape. But part of it, I think, is a fulfillment of what the Rambam is saying, that Shloye Atzev, he's gotta be upbeat, he's gotta be happy, he's gotta be positive. So I remember Rabbi Neuberger reading this Rambam once, and saying that a Ben Torah has a unique capacity to fill this responsibility that the Rambam says is incumbent upon a husband, in the sense that a Ben Torah, unique to maybe most people in the rest of the world, can take themselves out of the pressure and the difficulty of their surroundings and sit down and learn a sugya. And when you're really into a sugya and you're really breaking your teeth, going through the Gemara, going through the Rishonim, trying to understand, we all know we may not have every single Seder, every Chavrusa, every time that we sit down to learn, it's not like that. We've all had experiences where we're just so caught up and swept up with the sense of being in the Gemara, in the sugya, that the time flies and we don't even realize what's going on around us. And a Ben Torah has that inside of him, and it's a key to being positive and upbeat, because he can lose himself in his learning in a healthy way, in a positive way, that can disconnect from the negative things, the things that could reinforce, this atzvos that the Rambam is discussing. It has to be used as a positive way to channel our emotions so that a person comes home and interacts with his wife in a happy, upbeat way. And I think that's sort of what the Chavos HaLevavos is touching on over here, where a person's bitachon can almost transport that sense of being in the sugya to when he's just walking down the street, when he's reading the news, when he's talking to people, when he faces something which puts pressure on him in terms of the expectation of how he's going to respond. Bitachon means, I feel the pressure building. I feel that there's a situation, it's out of my control. I don't know what to do about it. There's tension. I'm not sure how to resolve it. I'm not sure how I'm going to overcome it. And then I can take a deep breath and say, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu's here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's here. I'm holding his hand. It's across the street. I'm holding his hand. I'm closing my eyes and I'm trusting him that he's leading me in the path that's best for me. And then you achieve that Menuchas HaNefesh and that Rechavas HaDas, and you become a different person. Your midos are different. Are different midos. People who are great Baal Bitachon, again, I'm not in a place to rate people's Bitachon, nor am I the type of person who has seen, you know, who has exposure to, you know, to say this person, that person. I can say from personal experience, one of the great Bali bitachon in our environs is Rabbi Twersky. And anyone who's had a serious conversation with him about a life decision or about even just processing current events knows his the extent to which he's a cheftz of Shar Bitachon. And I don't know of anyone who is ever more benachas and ever more able to just sit and be calm and think things through. I remember the first year that I was in Shir. So some of you guys may remember before Gluck. So all the Rebbeim had offices in first hall. And each office was really just like a closet. It was very, very small. Usually two Rebbeim shared it. I think Rabbi Twersky shared his closet with Rabbi Dr. Rosenzweig, Rosenzweig's father. And I remember going to speak with him one of the first times that I was in the shir, and he basically took up the whole room. And it was very imposing, you know, but I started asking him a question. It was a serious question. And I don't know if you've had this experience, but I know other people have. You talk to someone, you ask a Rav Shaila, and they don't respond immediately. So you quickly try to rephrase the question or pose it in a different way. Maybe it wasn't clear. You know, still no response. I did it again. You know, tried to rehash it in a way which, you know, maybe express what I was trying to, what was bothering more. No response. I did it again. And then finally he looked at me and he's like, just please allow me 1 minute to think about what you're saying. And I think I subsequently saw a similar maisa. Someone went to ask Rav Volbi a question, and the same thing happened. The Shammai said, like, if you don't give the Rav a chance to think, he's not able to answer your question. And I realized, you know, the Gemara says in Kedushin that Sipsei Kon Yishmu Das Tor Yivak from Epiu Kimal Hashem Zvakosu. Person is only supposed to be Mevakish Das, only supposed to learn from a Rebbe who's like a Mal Hashem. I don't know how many Malachi Hashem there are in the world who are also Rebbeim. I only know from our yeshiva, Rabbi Twersky is one of those people's Malach Hashem. And I realized that one quality of his Malach nature is that nothing comes out of his mouth without thorough thought and contemplation. And you need to be able to do that. You need to be so relaxed that almost like time is irrelevant, because the issue at hand is too weighty and too important to do in a reactive, impulsive type of way. So a person has to be tough in order to tap into that koch. Let's go to the next paragraph. So what the Chozal is going to do now, he says, I compared the Baal Bitachon to the alchemist. And then he says, you know what? It isn't really like that. Having Bitachon is actually much better than being an alchemist. And he says, there's a whole list, I think 10 different advantages, 10 different yisronos of the Baal Bitachon over and above the Aman HaKimika, as he describes it. Look at the bottom page Shin Zayin, about to turn to the next page. Yisun Rishmu, number one is Sha'aman HaKimika Zokag L'malach B'L'chamar M'achshim R'yuchadim She'B'L'adem L'yochal L'hotzi L'pol Shum Dabar. So number one, the profession of an alchemist requires certain materials, certain raw materials and tools and components that, again, whatever it is, he's mixing them together, he's performing these chemical reactions in order to achieve the desired result. So by definition, if there are tools and there are necessary ingredients to performing what it is that serves as his parnasa, that's his magical means to make the gold, so it means that by definition it's not always going to be accessible to you. The items are located somewhere, and you need your laboratory, and you need to make sure that your laboratory is stocked with these things. And if I happen to be on vacation, if I happen to be traveling, and I don't have access to those things, then I'm totally unable to perform that same process of alchemy. On the other hand, a person is boteach b'Hashem, so his parnasa is muvtachas, it's secure, it is assured. Somehow, Hashem says, I'm going to get it done. I'm going to provide you with what you need to survive, as long as you're playing, so to speak, by the rules of the world that I set out, from anywhere. You don't know where it's going to come. You always think, you know, it's going to be this, it's going to be that. Taman Mayashir just told me today, he was at my house for Shabbos a few weeks ago, and he was very happy that he had 3 internships lined up for the summer. And they were good internships. One of them was better than the others, and he was using that one to leverage a better deal or something like that from the other two, because the third one was very prestigious. So I remember telling him at the table, you know, like, you should be thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because I have so many other Talmidim who are scrounging, are desperate in the current climate to get even one internship. You have three. He told me yesterday, he was just schmoozing with some of the guys before Pesach. So I said, "No, what's the story with your internship?" So as many firms are doing, many firms have to cancel this summer's internships. The one that was most prestigious canceled on him, and now he has to go back to the other two and tell them, "Okay, I'm back in the game. I'm back in the game," because he had previously told him maybe he wasn't considering it so strongly. So you have no idea where it's going to come from. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to provide you with what you should have, but it's not up to you to decide where that's going to come from. But at the same time, it's in my hands to get you that pranasa from anywhere. Anything can be his means, his vehicle for pranasa. Because Baruch Hu fed us man in the midbar to demonstrate, as the pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu tells Klaus at the end of his life, that this shows you that it's not bread that keeps you alive. It's not food that sustains you. It's the motzu pi Hashem yichya adam. I decided to provide that yichya adam aliday the man. And sometimes when you're living under more natural circumstances, you'll have more natural provisions. But it's all the same. Shalom chasem laborim shalom lebrasos adam cholis b'chamakom. Gosh Baruch Hu is never missing his ability to provide for a single creature. Brings many examples of Avadia, ways in which miraculously Nevi'im provided or achieved Parnasa through means that were Ma'aseh Nisim. So everything's Ma'aseh Nisim. So the Yisron of Baal Bitachon is that he can trust that he's going to get it from somewhere. It's reminiscent of a story about Rav Gusman. I'm going to continue recording because my battery just died on the computer, and unfortunately the Zoom is out. The story is told as follows about Rav Gusman, that he had a yeshiva Netzach Yisrael that ultimately made it to Yerushalayim towards the end of his life. And Rav Gusman was makbid to go around watering the plants. And Talmidim asked him, "Why are you watering the plants? Why don't you let one of the Bakrim do it? It's not your job to always be watering plants. There's plenty of people who can help out. You're Rosh Hashiva." And he said, "No, I have a lot of Hakaras Hatov to the plants. Why? Because many years before, when he was a dayan in Reb Chaim Olzer's Beis Din in Vilna, at the age of 17, he was the youngest person ever to be taken as a member of the Beis Din. So every once in a while, they would go out for walks, Reb Chaim Olzer and Reb Gusman. And they would talk and learning, and they would sometimes go in the forest, get some fresh air. And as they were walking, Rav Chaim Olzer would say, "Oh, that bush over there has berries that you can eat. That tree over there has nuts. They're those you can eat. Oh, that bush over there, those berries, watch out, they're poisonous." And he never really understood, Rav Gusman never understood why Rav Chaim Olzer was taking the time to teach him these botanical lessons, you know, in the middle of their discussion of the Din Torah. Years later, when the Nazis came, so Rav Gusman had to run away and join the partisans in the forest. And for a good 2 years or so, he was living in mud holes and ditches and covered in vegetation to camouflage themselves. And very often they had nothing to eat. But because of Rav Chaim Olzer's lessons, he knew what wild fruits, what wild berries and nuts and things like that he could eat. And as a result, he had a Kriyas Tov to the plants, because they kept him alive during the years while he was hiding in the forest. So later in life, he expressed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu by feeding the bushes, so to speak, by watering the plants in yeshiva as an appreciation for what saved him. He never in a million years would have known that his parnasa would have come from the berries on the trees. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "I'm going to give you the means," the Reb Chaim Olzer's Ruach HaKodesh, whatever it was, that wherever you find yourself, you're going to have some sort of parnasa. Maybe more berevach in some parts of your life, less berevach in other parts of your life, but you'll never find yourself in a place where I can't provide for you. And that's the advantage of Baal Bitachon, to start working and thinking about the fact that while it may seem that it's in my hands, but as long as it's in your hands, there's limitations to what you can do and where you can do that or how you can do that. But the more a person feels that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is directing his life, then he knows that the limitations don't exist.